this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are searching for truths in ancient orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast on Apple iTunes or on the internet at epostle.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World. Whether you're listening on CD, over the internet, or on your MP3 player, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Welcome to The Next Step. Hey, this is Father Vazquez and welcoming you back to The Next Step, a podcast dedicated to looking at life, inspecting the very fabric of our being, and doing it all through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes Mission, the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center, and of course is brought to you by the good folks at the Apostles Net, Apostolic Evangelism for an expanding and electronic universe. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. Already the second week of Lent, and here we are. And you know, I gotta tell you, I'm still like pumped up from being back from Armenia. Whenever I baptize a child, there's always these old world traditions that come into play. And sometimes they look at the child who has that fresh chrism on their forehead and on his senses, and they say, "Be careful, the chrism has not yet dried." I feel the same way. I've gotten back from Armenia, and it's a new birth for me. It's just being born again in a sense, in a different sense of spiritually connecting with my roots, connecting with a time past. You know, I had a wonderful opportunity to spend almost 2 weeks in Armenia, not only in Armenia, but actually in the monastery where I studied some 30 years ago at the Holy See of Etchmiadzin, the mother see of Etchmiadzin. And I'm still like shaking from all that and still excited about that. So I'm going to be sharing some of that with you again today. And we're going to have a great podcast, because it is the second week of Lent. We're going to be talking about we're going to be building on what we started last week, because I did promise you that this would be a Lenten journey. Remember that? I said, we're going to be taking a Lenten journey that connects us from one side, the beginning of Lent, to Easter Sunday. Because on Easter, we're not going to be talking about little rabbits, bunny rabbits, and little chickies. We're going to be talking about victory. Yes. And those little bunny rabbits and chickies can have their place in there. But I'm telling you, there's a bigger victory that needs to talk to each and every one of us. So how do we prepare for that victory? That's what this Lenten journey is all about. So today we're going to be taking one more step closer to Easter. And actually, today's topic is going to be a little bit more metaphysical in nature. And I hope it will be kind of intriguing for so many of you. You know, metaphysical. We're going to talk about space-time relationships. Talking about, like, what about destiny? What about free will? Some of the big topics in our lives. So we're going to be looking at all those today, along with all of the other regular stuff that we do. We're going to be hearing some great music coming to us from Armenia, from the monasteries there. We're going to be hearing Ani with her bubbles, and of course Harach with the global perspective today, continuing on many of the themes that we just started touching on last week. So we've got a great, great program for you, and I hope this next few minutes that we share together will be as enjoyable for you as, of course, it's always enjoyable for us to put together. So we're going to start off today with a very special tune. Actually, some of you wrote to me and asked me about what did it mean, Vazgenyan Seminary. I guess the similarities with my name kind of like had some people wondering, like, what's going on here? Actually, Vazquez is the name of the patriarch, the Catholicos of the Armenian Church during the latter portion of the 20th century. He was a Catholicos. The Catholicos is the head of the church. I don't want to say like a pope, but in very real terms, yes, it's the similarity that you'll be able to draw. Technically, there's a lot of differences between a pope and a Catholicos, but the Catholicos, for our intent and purpose today, let's think of him as the head of the church, just as a pope would be. So the Catholicos during the 20th century, the latter portion of the 20th century, and during some of the most difficult Cold War era of the Armenian nation. Remember that Armenia was one of the republics of the Soviet Union. Well, Vazgen I was the Catholicos from 1955 to 1994. And so you put it in perspective. I mean, that is the ultimate Cold War period. And until, of course, Gorbachev brought down that wall that Reagan was calling for and so on, you know the story. I don't need to go into it. But he really led the church in some very difficult times. And after his passing, in Lake Sevan, right now in Armenia, there is a beautiful lake called Lake Sevan, and there is a monastery up there. They established a new seminary there, and they dedicated it to the late Catholicos, and they call that the Vazgenyan Seminary. It is named after him. So when I talked about the seminarians at the Vazgenyan Seminary, I'm talking about exactly an institution that was started there during the last 10-15 years, and I had a great chance to go and visit with the students, with the administration there, and I was given this incredible CD, which, by the way, last week we played, and the following day was the release of the CD on the Etchmiadzin website. So you heard it first here, like so many great things. So we're going to be playing another song from that. Let's listen to the students at the Vazgenyan Theological Academy at Lake Sevan singing Ortnyale Astvats. Does it get any better than that? Yes, those were the students at the Vazgenyan Theological Seminary Academy at Lake Sevan. And you heard it over here, Orhnyale Asvads, Blessed is God. And that's a tune that comes out of the Divine Liturgy. And it is a hymn that is sang every Sunday as at the conclusion of the Mass, at the conclusion of the liturgy. And it is a praise, one that is filled with praise. And I think the energy level that you heard the students singing with is a testament to what the words are all about. And I say this because, you know, we have so many listeners. The kind of responses that we're getting on these podcasts are interesting, and I'm trying to really put it all together because we have a group of people who are part of the church that are trying to reconnect to the church, and we have a group of people that are just discovering the Armenian church, not necessarily ethnically Armenian, but are connecting to the beautiful music and the prayers that we've been offering on these podcasts. And one of the things that I think is so important when we hear a piece of music like that is to hear the excitement and the energy level with which it is sung. And these hymns are exactly meant to not only for the singer to brighten their day, but to allow each and every one of us to rise to the occasion. You know, a lot of times in our church, in the Armenian church, we go through these mental exercises about language issues. And this has gone on for forever, at least as long as I could remember, which is close to forever. And so there's always this discussion, like, should we change the language of the liturgy? And the argument is, well, people can't understand the liturgy. And my argument is always been like, well, why are we trying to understand with our heads? At what point do we start understanding with our hearts and with our souls? When you hear a piece of music like that, it's not about listening to each and every word and figuring out how do these words play into it, but actually throwing yourself into the music. Let that music surround you and rise, allow you to rise to the occasion. You know, our liturgy is written for the angels, and so many times we try to bring those angels down to earth instead of each and every one of us try to fly with the angels. And of course, I'm talking metaphorically, but I hope you understand what I'm saying. It's a question of us being able to rise from our humanity and really fly, really reach the potential, reach the goals that God has in store for us. And it begins by taking that first step, by allowing God to work His magic, to work His wonders, His miracles in each and every one of our lives. So that's really why I want to play some of these tunes, because you really don't get a chance to experience that so much in day-to-day life. But when you hear these tunes, you're able to, really in that monastic setting, especially in that monastic setting, you're able to really realize that there is a higher dimension. And you need to aspire for that higher dimension. And this is a tricky one, because it does involve discipline, it involves prayer, and it involves some very fundamental points which the Lenten process facilitates. In other words, this atmosphere that we create in Lent, where we fast, where we up our prayer life, where we continue with our mercy and our compassion towards others. You know, we discussed that quite extensively last week. We talked about those three areas that really have to be heightened in our life. Well, all of these come together and they create an environment that is conducive to our spiritual well-being and our spiritual growth. That's what Lent is all about. So that at the end of the Lenten journey, sure, you meet Christ resurrected, you meet the victory at the end, but you learn the basic elements of life that are so essential to continue throughout your lifetime, not just during these 40 days. These 40 days are the prelude to a greater life that is in front of you, that has been prepared for you since the beginning of time, and for you to plug into and really maximize all that God has for you. So as we continue this journey, this Lenten journey, I said that today we'd take a more metaphysical approach, and we're going to be talking about some very important issues, but I do want to say that this is the second week of Lent. And the message that comes to us, it's called, the second week is called the Sunday of the Prodigal, and the prodigal son story, which appears in the Gospel of Luke, is definite reading material for anybody. And I really mean this. This is one of those stories that has every element, every feeling, and it is probably the ultimate parable given to us by Jesus, because there is so much to draw from it. So I'm inviting you right now to check out Luke chapter 15, and from verses 11 and on, Jesus tells the story of the prodigal son. Prodigal, somebody who squanders, who wastes away what his father has given him. That wasting, that's the prodigal lifestyle. It's basically having something so valuable and not appreciating it. Isn't that true of our lives too? God gives us this life and we really squander it, don't we? We really waste it away. We bring in all kinds of diseases, all kinds of poisons into our atmosphere, into our ecosystems, into our lives, into our relationships. And then we wonder, why do we get so messed up in our lives? Well, the prodigal son is that story. But I'm not going to hit it specifically today, because in the next 2 weeks that follow, there is the story of the steward, the dishonest steward. And on the week following, there's the story of the judge. And I'm going to group these all together because it's interesting that Jesus uses three separate parables, which the Armenian Orthodox faith has so beautifully been able to capitalize on it. In other words, it's saying that these 3 weeks of Lent are going to be called the week of the prodigal, the steward, and the judge. And so what's unique about these parables is that they highlight, they make a hero out of someone who doesn't deserve, by every worldly standard, every divine standard, doesn't deserve to be a hero. Here is a son who squanders everything that he is given. The steward is somebody who is dishonest, who really destroys the trust and really squanders this responsibility that he was given. And a judge who could care less about people and care less about justice. And yet Jesus uses these three people to become the heroes of his story, and points to them. And what I want to point to is that these three characters, these three parables, are uniquely Armenian Orthodox. In other words, the Armenian Church selects these three parables to highlight what the Lenten journey should be about, where we're going. Three characters that otherwise would be repulsive, that don't belong in religion. You know, you always think about religion and the goody-two-shoe people, you know? They're always so nice and clean and everything. But look at who Jesus uses. He doesn't use presidents and business executives. He uses people that otherwise are outcast, don't belong in the story. And he allows us to learn something about ourselves. Now, I want to talk about these three characters: the prodigal son, the dishonest steward, and the judge, next week and the week following as we move closer. Because today, what I want to do is I want to build on what we talked about last week. Remember, we talked about the expulsion Sunday, the expulsion of mankind from paradise, of each and every one of us that defies what God has prepared. God tells us, love everyone, but we have our conditions. We say, not everyone. God says, value the family, and we say, well, the dollar buys us more. And I went through quite a few different scenarios with you last week. I want to build on that. And in so doing, I want to take a little bit of time out right now to go to our spiritual bubbles. Because Nerses Shnorhali, Nerses the Grace-Filled, which has been the emphasis of this Lenten journey's bubbles, sets the mood.
Today's spiritual bubble is from the prayers of St. Narcissus, the Grace-Filled. Spirit of God, true God, who descended into the Jordan and into the upper chamber, and who enlightened me by baptism in the holy font, I have sinned against heaven and before you. Cleanse me, your divine fire, as you purified the holy apostles with fiery tongues. Uncreated essence, I have sinned against you in mind, soul, and body. Do not remember my former sins for the sake of your holy name. Beholder of all, I have sinned against you in thought, word, and deed. Erase the record of my offenses and write my name in the book of life. Searcher of secrets, I have sinned against you willingly and unwillingly, knowingly and unknowingly. Grant me, a great sinner, forgiveness. For since I was born of the holy font until this day, I have sinned before you, by my senses and by all the members of my body. Have mercy upon your creatures and upon me, a great sinner. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Now, this prayer that Ani is reading during her Lenten journey, Lenten bubbles, so to speak, comes to us from Saint Narcissus the Grace-Filled, Shnor Hali. He was a saint of the 12th century, a Catholicos of the Armenian Church at that time, and he's written countless prayers and hymns of the Church. This unique prayer comes to us in 24 verses, and each verse uniquely describes our relationship with God. And in so doing, it also points to our sinful side. Now, I'm intentionally using the word side rather than nature because I don't want to conjure up negative images, because so many times when we talk about sin, people believe that intrinsically it is a bad thing. Now, we got to get away from that idea. Yes, obviously, sin is bad because it means we are separated from God, separated from love. If you're not in love, if you're not connected to love, obviously, that's not somewhere you want to be. But sin in itself just means missing the mark. It means you're shooting for the bullseye, but you're a little bit to the left, you're a little bit to the right, maybe a little bit high, maybe a little bit low. Sometimes you've missed the target completely. Sin doesn't mean anything intrinsically bad. It just means we are human. Remember this. To be human means you sin. You're not perfect. And when you do meet that perfect individual who doesn't sin, then at that point, get down on your knees and just realize that you're in the presence of God. Otherwise, short of God, everybody sins. Each and every one of us does. We miss the mark. Now, all of this connects with the idea of accountability. Now, if we miss that mark, if we are sinful, if we live in sin, then are we accountable for our actions? I remember some years ago, there was this famous case. It was called the Twinkie Defense. In fact, I believe last year there was a movie made about, it was called Milk, about Harvey Milk. And in San Francisco, there was a mayor, George Moscone. I can't remember. It was probably toward the end of the 70s. I was probably in my early 20s. I remember the case specifically because George Moscone was killed, and the person, Dan White, who did it, took the Twinkie defense. I specifically, now, if you don't know what a Twinkie is, and I got to explain this because I know we have listeners throughout the world, and I don't know where Hostess delivers, but Twinkie is basically a junk food. It's in the same category with all those sugary foods. It's like a little bit of bread with some cream inside and just packed, packed, packed with sugar. So the Twinkie defense was in the American courts. This is what Dan White claimed, that because of the sugar contents of the Twinkies, that he had allergies, these were stimulants, and he was beyond his senses. And so he was not responsible for the murder of the mayor Moscone, but the Twinkies were responsible. And this is true. I mean, go look it up. Twinkie defense. Believe it or not, this does happen. And the same is true in our lives. If you remember last week when we talked about the story of Adam and Eve, and I challenged you not to think about it as two historical individuals, Adam and Eve, but think of it as a story of humankind, of you and me. It's basically us giving an answer, defending ourselves when we've fallen into sin. When Adam was confronted by God and said, "Did you do that? Did you go against my commandment?" What does Adam say? "It wasn't me, it was the Twinkie. It was the woman who did it." And then God goes up to Eve and said, "Did you do it?" And the woman says, "It wasn't me, it was the Twinkie. It was the serpent that made me do it." Well, we too. Especially when we're children, what do? We blame it on a brother, on a sister, or sometimes as adults we say, "Oh, the devil got into him and the devil did it." And this is okay, it's cutesy, but it's not a mature way of dealing with life. A mature individual needs to take responsibility for his or her life. But taking that responsibility implies that he is free to do otherwise. Because in the freedom article, if we are free, it means that we are completely free to do this action or another action. And we cannot blame it on anybody. We cannot blame it on the stars, according to astrology, on tea leaves in a teacup, in a coffee cup, in coffee grinds. We cannot even blame it on God. And many times we do this. We come up with the idea that God is omniscient, and this is accepted in most of Christianity. Most of the monotheistic religions believe that God is omniscient. In other words, he knows everything. So if God knows everything, can I do otherwise? Today I want to make a right turn at that street. But if God knows that I'm going to turn left, am I free to turn right? And so we played mental gymnastics. I get to the street, and if I do turn against what God was supposed to do, we reconcile, we rationalize, and we say, "Well, God knew that you were going to change your mind at the end." And of course, I'm talking about turning at the corner. But there are bigger turns that we take, bigger choices that we take. Today, if you and I eat something for lunch, probably has no major moral consequence to it. You decide to have a hamburger as opposed to a salad. It may not have a big consequence unless you get a tummy ache or unless you die of food poisoning. Then you got a big consequence there and wills and things like that. But those are relatively small things and can be attributed to accidents. Accidents do happen, basically against our will. But there are bigger decisions that you and I make in our lives. To be able to love people, to be able to care for other people, to be able to express our love. And these are the actions that require us to make decisions, and we have to realize that there are moral consequences to our actions. For instance, today in Darfur, we know that there is a genocide happening. And people who have suffered genocide, whether they're Armenians or Cambodians, whether they are Rwandans or Bosnians, whoever they may be, people especially who have gone through genocide, need to react, because basically there is something that is happening there that requires us to make a decision today. And if we don't, who can you blame? It's not enough to just blame the people that are perpetrating that crime. We have to blame ourselves for our silence. As Martin Luther King said many times, it's not just the person who is committing the crime, but we have to blame ourselves for our collective silence, for our individual silence. And so when we talk about God's omniscience, it is a very immature way of approaching our life. In fact, fundamentalists will always claim that, you know, that God is omniscient, God knows everything. Well, if you follow that logic, what do fundamentalists tell you? They say that unless you are a Christian, you are destined to go to hell. Well, they also believe that God creates everyone, and they believe that God knows everything at the time of creation. Therefore, God knows what an individual will do with his life. God knows if that individual will become a Christian or not. Therefore, these people believe that God creates certain individuals destined for hell. And the same goes true for the story of Judas. Was Judas free to do otherwise? And we could say, of course he was. But according to some readings of the scriptures, we're told that God knew from the beginning, because we were told. And this is why last week I made a very distinct point of saying Armenian Orthodoxy doesn't talk about the facts of the Bible. It talks about the truth of the Bible. The Bible is completely true. It is not factual, though. It is not a document of a bunch of facts. It is a story of God's love for us. And we need to be able to be in that relationship of love with God for us to understand how blessed our life is. In our lives, you and I are free to do whatever we want. We reject the idea of fate. Fate says that no matter what, there's a destiny out there, and there's a fate that will happen. If you believe in fate, let's take an example. Let's suppose that you believe that at 3 o'clock today, you will die in a car accident. A car will smash you and you will die. And I apologize. I'm just trying to make this dramatic because some of these points do need to be dramatic. But this is what fate believes. This is what destiny believes. So today, to avoid that car accident, you go out to the Empire State Building and you go up to the top floor and you say, okay, I'm going to be here on the top floor. I am going to save myself, and I will show you that fate will not work. And you decide to hide at the top level of the Empire State Building where no car can get you. Well, if you believe in fate, if you believe that destiny, that it was written out for you, that at 3 o'clock, a car will hit you and you will die, then it follows that right at 3 o'clock, an airplane will fly over the Empire State Building, it'll lose one of its hinges, the hatch will open, and from the cargo chute, a car that was inside that plane will fall and kill you. That's what fate says. And we don't believe that. We reject that. And that's why we reject all of these fortune-telling methods and people that will tell you that this is what your life will be. There is no destiny apart from what you create in your life. You are responsible for your life. And there isn't anybody else you can blame for your life. You can't blame your friends. You can't blame a Twinkie. You can't blame your wife or your husband. You can't blame a serpent. And you can't blame God. It's like many times that we give last rites to somebody in a cancer ward, and we say that, well, why did God do this to this person? And yet we forget to realize that if the guy didn't even smoke, certainly we have put all of these carcinogens inside of our system, in our ecosystem, and we have polluted our planet, and these are cancerous cells that develop within us. How could you blame God for that? Or you find the woman who's swimming out in the ocean, and you say, well, why did she drown? Well, did she reject the signs that were put up there that said rip currents and do not swim? And sometimes it's a very easy scapegoat. It's the Twinkie defense that we point to God and say that it is God's fault for all of our difficulties. The mature Christian takes a responsibility for his or her life. And I challenge you today to really do this, as this second week of Lent takes on a new dimension in our lives. And I told you that today is going to be a little bit more metaphysical, because I wanted you to think about some of the bigger concepts out there, that you are responsible for your life. And really challenge yourself to look beyond all of the usual cliches, what the commercials tell you, the stories about Adam and Eve and the stories about serpents and things like that, and really think about your relationship with God, meaning your relationship with love. How are you approaching people? How are you approaching others? And probably the most fundamental question, how are you approaching yourself? What is the relationship that you have with yourself? What are the values that you're putting on yourself? Are you able to really express the love that God has placed in your heart? Or are you hindering it behind some of the usual things that you tend to blame? Because I was brought up this way. Because my mother did this to me. My father did this to me. Because my relationships have gone sour. Because I have lost a love. Because I have lost a partner. Because I haven't been able to succeed in life. These are basically the Twinkies in our life. These are basically the things that keep us from missing the mark. Responsibility means saying, I am the reason why I have not succeeded, and therefore I will be the reason why I will succeed when I decide to allow that love to really flower in my life by extending a hand to the people that I love, to the people that I care for, and extending a hand beyond myself to the people that cannot extend, to the people that need that love and that care in their lives. The second week of Lent gives us this beautiful opportunity. Well, not necessarily switching gears right now because it's all about responsibility and about actions that are taken. Here's Harach Chilingirian from London with The Global Perspective.
This is Harach in London, and welcome to this week's Global Perspective. This is the second part of the three-part segment on Christian minorities in the Middle East today, which I started last week, with a particular focus on the relatively small Armenian communities spread in some 10 countries in the region. As you remember, last week I discussed the larger context of the existing military, social, religious, and economic difficulties in the Middle East, and the effects of these processes on the very existence and vitality of Christian communities. I now want to highlight the case of the Armenian community and discuss the main institutions that play significant roles in defining and maintaining Armenian identity in the diaspora and the Middle East in particular. And these are the church, school, and the media in a broader sense. First, the church. It is historically, politically, and sociologically significant that the three hierarchical sees of the Armenian Apostolic Orthodox Church are located in the Middle East. That is the Catholicosate of Cilicia in Antilles, Lebanon, since 1930, but of course with roots that go back to the 13th century. The Patriarchate of Jerusalem, established at the beginning of the 14th century. And the Patriarchate of Constantinople in Istanbul, established in the 15th century. Moreover, the Patriarchate of the Armenian Catholic Church, or the Armenian Rite, is in Bzomar, Lebanon, in the mountains, as well as one of the oldest Armenian Protestant church organizations, the Armenian Evangelical Union of Near East. While on the one hand, country constitutions in the Middle East give prominence to religion and religious institutions, unlike in Western democracies, churches or minority religious establishments in the Middle East provide essential spaces for group socialization and interaction. For instance, the Armenian Church in the Middle East provides a significant identity marker and is identity preserver in the context of the larger Islamic society. Besides religious services, the churches administer schools, charities, and promote cultural production. Moreover, the Armenian Church and generally Christian churches in the Middle East have state-recognized authority to administer family law. For example, they issue marriage licenses, grant divorce, mediate in family disputes, and other such services. The second important institution is the school. The church and political parties had played pivotal roles in the development of Armenian education and spread of schools in the Middle East. However, the current situation of the Armenian schools throughout the Middle East is reflective of the decline of the communities. In the last decade alone, Armenian schools in Lebanon, Egypt, Iraq, Iran, and Turkey have seen drastic decline in enrollment numbers, quality of teaching staff, and financial resources. To give you an idea, in 10 years between 1991 and 2001, the number of Armenian schools in Lebanon fell from 45 to 33, and the number of students from about 12,000 to 8,000. In Iran, the decline of the number of students in Armenian schools is even more drastic. Whereas before the Islamic Revolution, Armenian schools collectively had 17,000 students, today the figure stands at about 4,400. These problems are not just self-inflicted, of course, but are largely due to the gradual effects of socioeconomic and political conditions. The role of the state is not less insignificant. Due to restrictions imposed by many governments in the Middle East on the curriculum, explained Catholicos Aram of Cilicia, courses dealing with religion, ethics, and education are getting increasingly marginalized and even neglected, he said. Armenian schools, for instance in Syria, Egypt, Jordan, Iraq, Iran, Turkey, with the exception of Lebanon, are required to implement the state curriculum in its entirety and in Arabic, Farsi, or Turkish. They are allowed only a limited number of periods for Armenian language and religion. The state constitutions, for instance, in Syria and Turkey, also impose government-appointed principals in Armenian schools. In terms of cultural production in the Middle East, the decline is also enormous. Cairo, Aleppo, or Beirut were significant centers of literary and cultural production. They had vibrant literary and intellectual life for decades. White cultural production, including Armenian theater, music, and generally the arts, had complemented the work of religious, spiritual, and educational institutions to reinforce identity, language, and Armenian national values. But all these are in decline. And finally, the third important element of community life is the media. While the internet has opened up a wide range of choices of news sources and information, Armenian language newspapers in the Middle East are dying or are in serious decline. They face three major perennial problems. The first is shockingly new for the Middle East, a lack of readers. There is steady and alarming decline of Armenian readers. Even in Lebanon, once considered the mother of diasporas, Arabic and English have become the preferred languages among the youth. Secondly, there are enormous shortages of journalists, writers, and contributors who can write in Armenian. Beyond the lack of journalists and readers and the economic and administrative implications of these problems, none of the newspapers are financially self-sufficient, the third problem, which in turn has caused a lack of organizational infrastructure. The future of the Armenian language media in the Middle East depends as much on socioeconomic variables that are beyond the control of the community as it does on the determination and dedication of a handful of publishers, editors, and writers. Against this background of such ongoing internal problems, next week in the third and final segment of this theme, I will discuss the external problems facing Christian minorities and Armenians in the Middle East, especially socioeconomic problems, growing religious fundamentalism, and the existing military security threats. So until next time, This is Raj Chilingirian with the Global Perspective.
Well, we look forward to each of these segments, as I know you do. It's always a pleasure to have Harash produce these pieces. He comes from the University of Cambridge over in England. And these pieces really give us a little practical application to a lot of the concepts that we talk about. And I really appreciate this opportunity to put them together side by side. Today's podcast, in essence, talking about responsibility on a personal level and talking about it in community levels and global levels. And we look forward to his next installment when he talks about some of the outside influences to the community. And I'm sure that as we go through these global perspectives, it gives us a broader understanding of how we need to take our faith and really apply many of the things that we've learned and are continuing to learn. Well, before we end this podcast, I want to invite you to our website, inhisshoes.org, where all of the things that we talk about here, as well as of a lot of other things, are publicized, are produced over there. And specifically, I want to just let you know that the situation in Darfur, we talked about it earlier very briefly, it is a grave situation. It is genocide. It has been labeled as genocide, and all the indicators of genocide are right there. But we need you to get involved as well. Today, for the first time, a sitting head of state has been indicted by the International Tribunal. But we need you to plug into it by getting your voice heard. So visit our site, visit the Darfur sites, and make your voice heard. Sign the petitions. Get the word out. Spread the word out there. And along those same lines, you know, Darfur is one of many countries or one of many areas. The Sudan is the country over there in Africa where there is great hunger. And the In His Shoes mission for how many years now has been doing the 30-hour famine organized by World Vision. And we invite you this time, you know, a small group of kids, just a small group of kids has under the umbrella of In His Shoes, has raised just about, I think a little bit over $500,000 by praying and fasting. And we're going to be doing Famine 2009 on the weekend of April 24th this year, April 25th and 26th. 30 hours we're going to be fasting for world hunger. And the way we do this is we get sponsorship. We raise money by getting sponsors who will sponsor us during those hours of fasting. But because of our podcast, we don't have to restrict it only to a certain geographic area. And so today, I'm officially inviting you, the listeners, the people who have made The Next Step with Father Voskin so popular, to join in. We're going to have a kickoff in Glendale on March 15th, and I would love it if you could kick off in your communities. It's very easy. Drop us an email. You know what? Drop me an email directly to me. Make it out to father@inhisshoes.com. Just send me an email and tell me you're going to get a few people together, a group of people together to aid world hunger. Do you know that right now, today, right now, 29,000 children, not people, children, well, of course they're people, but young people, children die of hunger. And it is the one thing that you and I can prevent. It's getting the food out there. It's by praying and fasting, and I'm inviting you to take responsibility for this. Join us. Go to our website, inhisshoes.org. You'll see some material over there about the 30-hour famine. Please join us. Drop me an email personally and let me know that you and your community are going to do something about it, and I will set you up. I will make sure that you get all of the stuff that you need to get your community going. It's a fantastic opportunity to bring young people together. Just bring people together. You spend 30 hours together in lockdown, no food, but a lot of spirit. And I got to tell you, that spirit is what keeps us going. So join us at inissues.org. And also remember to check out our website, epostle.net, for this podcast as well as every other podcast. I want to thank our listener, Deacon Ludwig, who sent us some information about the I Confess With Faith. And I want to invite you to his website. It's called arevakal.com. And Arevakal has the 24 verses, not only in English, but also in 24 different languages. So you may want to check them out as well. Listen, this has been a great podcast. It's a pleasure doing them for you, and I hope it's an equal pleasure for you to be receiving this. So for the crew that puts this together, for Harach out in London, for Ani with her bubbles, for Susie, our producer, and for Ken, who engineers these shows, this is Father Voskin inviting you again next week when together we will take the next step.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.